89.3 4CRB.
And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You. As always, this is your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. The number, of course, 55208888. That number again, 55208888. For those south of the Tweed River, you'll need to put 07 in front of the number, but otherwise you'll get straight through. And as we say every week, please don't leave those calls to the last 5 or 10 minutes of the program. If you have a question or a query, give us a call as soon as you possibly can on that number, 55208888, so that we can not only help you, but hopefully we can help other people who might have a similar question but aren't able to get to a telephone to raise that query. And, well, what a great long weekend it's been. I hope everyone enjoyed the football. A little bit sad, the result of the rugby league on Sunday. I think everyone in Queensland was hoping for a Cowboys win, but sadly that wasn't to be. All that being said, congratulations to Melbourne Storm. I think anyone who watched the game would say that they deserved to win. They played passionately with a great deal of skill. So as much as I would have loved to have seen Queensland win, we have to be gracious in defeat. And, of course, the AFL on Saturday as well. And I'm sure that game split many a household, with some people barracking for Richmond and others barracking for the Adelaide Crows. Certainly split our household between my wife and myself. Couldn't quite bring myself to barrack for Adelaide, so I was going for Richmond, and was pleased to see that they got up. But again, great game of football, and played with great passion as well. But enough of that. We've got our first caller on the line, Gary. Good morning, Gary. How are you today?
Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
Well, indeed. How can we help you today?
John, I think mine could be a fairly simple one. The other day I was listening to you talk about property. Now, my wife and I have been married for a number of years, mm-hmm. but our house is in her name. I'm not actually on the title.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, obviously we've done our wills, that wouldn't affect us as such by her saying, well, everything, that the house goes to my husband, da 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 da.
The only thing that will do, Gary, is that it will mean that if your wife were to predecease you, then you will have to do what's called a transmission by death to get the property transmitted into your name, and it means that the property would be regarded as part of her estate. So I'm not sure of your circumstances, obviously, but if there was someone who was likely to make a claim against your wife's estate, that house would obviously be an asset. Are you in Queensland or New South Wales?
Queensland.
Okay. Often people would have their house in their wife's name for business reasons, so often it's an asset protection issue. But if your home is in your wife's name, and circumstances are such now that there's unlikely to be any likely claim, for example, against you, it is a fairly simple process to get the property transferred from your wife's name into both names. And if you were to put it into both names as joint tenants, then on your wife's death, you still do have to lodge a document to the titles office to have the property recorded in your name, but the house is then outside of the estate, and that asset will automatically devolve upon you, for example, as the surviving joint owner, if you survive your wife, or alternatively, it would still automatically devolve on your wife if you were to predecease her. Now, there's no stamp duty involved in doing that, as long as it is your principal place of residence, but you would have to pay the cost of getting a transfer done and the titles office registration fee. But the titles office registration fee is only about $180. So there's not a huge cost involved in doing it. It would just simplify the process. But if you don't, as I say, you would need to deal with it by way of transmission by death. Now, depending on what assets your wife has in her own name, when you lodge an application for transmission by death, if you have not had to get probate of the will, it is necessary for you to lodge the original will with the transmission application. So you would need to make sure that any other assets that you needed to deal with that required production of the will have been dealt with before you go to that stage of doing the transmission, because the original will need to be lodged at that point in time.
Yeah. Everything else is pretty, all the cars are in there and our names together. And I mean, I was on the loan for the mortgage. But
yes.
Since we don't have a mortgage now, I heard you talking about someone else, and they were saying, I don't think they were married, they're in a de facto, like Michelle, my wife has no siblings or anything to sort of put a claim on her will. I just her sister or her immediate family would be that. So it's pretty basic for us.
Those people would not come within the class of persons who could bring a claim against her estate. The only people who can bring a claim on her estate are you as her spouse, your children, and anyone who's financially dependent upon her at the time that she passes away. So if you've got wills which leave everything to each other and it's a first marriage, then it would be highly unlikely that there would be any issue in dealing with the transfer of the property by way of a transmission by death. It's just that it's a slightly more complicated process, and for that reason, if the property were joint tenants and you converted it to joint tenancy at this point in time, that would just make it a little bit easier.
And we're within our rights, like we're each other's executors, and if anything untoward should happen, I'm like her power of attorney, she's my power of attorney. Mm. That's all legit, isn't it?
Yes, no, there's certainly no problem with that. Depending on whether your power of attorney has provision in it to enter into what are referred to as conflict transactions, though, you would not be able to if something happened and your wife lost capacity, unless there was provision in there allowing for conflict transactions in the power of attorney, you would not at that stage be able to transfer a half share of the house into your name, but you certainly could use the power of attorney to sell the property if that was required, but then you could not use half of the money you could not use that money to, for example, buy a nursing or a retirement village home in joint names, because the power of attorney, unless it specifically allows you to enter into conflict transactions, would not permit you to do that. So for that reason, it's probably not a bad idea to get the ownership of the property changed to joint tenants at this point in time, or alternatively to just get your power of attorney and will documents checked to make sure that they would allow you to enter into a conflict transaction if that were necessary down the track.
Yes, that's an interesting point. I might even want to actually talk about that tonight. Thank you for that, John. I really appreciate your help.
Okay, then, Gary, all the very best.
Have a great day. Bye.
And you're in tune with 4CRB. The time has just passed 20 minutes to 10. The Law and You is the program. 5520888 is the number. That number again, 5520888. If you have a legal question or a query, get on that telephone right now. You'll get straight through and we'll be able to deal with that question promptly. It was a little bit slow out of the blocks last week, to be honest. We had a bit of a hiatus before calls started rolling through, and then, of course, as is usual, they started flowing in towards the final part of the program, and that means that we always have that build-up at the very end. So if you could get on the telephone right now, that would be great. The other thing, of course, that's I think on everyone's lips at the today, and I suspect that a lot of people are presently glued to their televisions, is that tragic shooting incident over in Las Vegas that greeted us in the news this morning as we all woke. And the last news I heard before I left home was, I think, about 58 people have been killed and hundreds injured in that senseless shooting. And, of course, it does bring into high relief the question about gun laws, and it does beg the question why in the United States. I know that gun laws and the right to bear arms is a very passionate thing that many, many Americans feel strongly about, but one does have to ask the question why they can allow people to be able to get hold of things like machine guns and semi-automatic weapons that can inflict so much death and destruction in such a very short space of time. From what I understand, that shooting took place over only about 10 minutes, and for 58 people to be killed in 10 minutes, it does make you think about it and perhaps be thankful that in Australia all those years ago, the gun control laws were tightened up to make it more difficult to get hold of those semi-automatic weapons that can do that. We certainly wake each day and see that there are incidents occurring with shootings and goodness knows what. In Australia, it seems that every other day on the news there has been a shooting. But, of course, the big difference here is that the weapons that are used, and weapons obviously still find their way into the hands of criminals, but most of those incidents involve just the shooting of one person, and one life lost is bad enough, but to think what the situation might be if people were still readily able to get hold of semi-automatic weapons and use them in these incidents, I think we indeed can be very thankful that the government in Australia changed those laws all those years ago. 55208888, The Law and You is the program. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Due to popular demand, Earl Haven Retirement Village at Lawrence Drive, Narang, is currently building our next stage of deluxe 2- and 3-bedroom units. With viewing available, we are accepting deposits now. At Earl Haven, we have a large, friendly community of residents and offer a vast range of facilities and social activities, with our a la carte restaurant and coffee shop opening 7 days a week. To make an appointment to view our units, please call me, Shelley, on 55783433.
For independent living and serviced apartments, call our sponsor Earl Haven Retirement Village, Lawrence Drive, Narang, on 55783433.
Tune in for the weekly financial market wrap-up every Saturday morning at 10 past 11. Brought to you by FS Securities, a stockbroking company right here on the Gold Coast. Call them on 56304141.
And you're in tune with 4CRB 89.3 FM. The Law and You is the program. 55208888, the number if you have a question or a query. That number again, 55208888. And we say a very good morning to Josie. Hello, Josie. How are you today?
Well, thank you. John, how are you?
Well, indeed. How can we help?
That's good. Last week you were discussing equality in regards to the gay marriage and the plebiscite.
Right.
And I'm just ringing to remind you about that and wondering if you're going to touch on that again today.
Oh, yes, look, I do. Unfortunately, Josie, I'm not going to do that because I have successfully managed to mislay the file in relation to the Law and You. I've been looking for it since last week, and I just do not know what I've done with it. So, unfortunately, I've had to turn up in the studios today with a printout of a couple of forms so that I can continue on with the program today. So, until I can locate that, I won't be able to do it, but I'll hope to be able to make some comment on it next week if I can.
Okay. All right, then. Thanks very much, John,
for the call and the reminder.
Thank you.
And the time just continues to march on. It's, 14 and a half minutes to 10, 14 and a half minutes to 11, of course, south of the border, as we say a very good morning to Carol. Good morning, Carol. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
How can we help?
Listen, okay, I got a barbecue boat hire from the Gold Coast company, and because the weather this week, I rang them up yesterday afternoon and asked them if it could be cancelled for tomorrow and rescheduled for next week on the 11th, the weather permitting. Now, we've been in contact this morning, and he has told me that I need to give him the rescheduling is permitted with a minimum of 40 hours notice. Cancellation of hire of the reason other than unsuitable weather will result in loss of deposit. Now, he's told me today that he will decide this afternoon whether the weather will be fine or not for tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he wants me to pay an extra $50 for the rescheduling of the boat hire for next week.
Mm. So, Carol, did you sign any documents at all in relation to the hire?
No, they sent me a contract type of thing, a fixed hire agreement form.
Mm-hmm.
A hire agreement form.
All right. And did you sign that and send it back, or how did that happen?
No, I haven't signed it. I just paid a deposit. I paid the money for $165.
Right.
And I said to him that the way the weather is predicted this week, it's going to be rainy and overcast every day, and the people that are going out are over 60 years old.
Mm.
They don't want to be going out on the water with overcast and rainy fight as the weather has forecasted it, and now he's got his attitude that he could have hired the boat out tomorrow, and now he wants me to pay an extra $50 to reschedule, and nothing like that in the contract as well.
Right.
To reschedule it. He wants to start up a business here on the coast. If this is his attitude, it's not going down very good with
people. No, no, it's certainly a ridiculous thing to do, particularly with the weather the way it is, and it's quite understandable. Look, without reading through the terms and conditions of the hire contract you were sent, I can't really comment further on what you may or may not have agreed to, but regardless of what you may or may not have agreed to, it seems to be rather a ridiculous way to be building up goodwill in relation to your business with the way the weather is at the moment.
Well, when I did book it, I spoke to his wife. This is the first time I've spoken to him. And his wife said, look, weather permitting, we'll just reschedule it for another day type of thing, because you can't predict the weather. And we agreed on that with her. And
right,
he won't put her onto the phone.
Right, okay. Well, look, if the wife did say to you that weather permitting will simply reschedule, then I think that I would be sticking to your guns. What part of the Gold Coast do you live on, Carol?
I live down at Coomabah area. It's Hope Island area.
Oh, right, okay.
Coomabah, this is Hope Island.
Yes.
Hope Island, the boat is in.
And is it possible for you to get into Southport at all?
Yes.
Okay, what I would suggest you do is give the Citizens Advice Bureau in Southport a call, because what you could do is you could take the form that you've got from this particular fellow into them, and you could tell them exactly what occurred. I can give you their phone number if you have a pen handy.
He won't let me put the wife on the phone because he's been ridiculous in his conversation.
He's
not going to go down very good with the business just starting up.
No, no, that's for sure.
No, I can't not.
All right, okay, well, look...
just tell me it and I'll remember it.
Okay, well, it's the Citizens Advice Bureau at Southport. So their number is 553-29611. So it's 553-29611. Okay. Or the other organisation I would suggest you ring is Consumer Affairs. So if you're in Consumer Affairs, in they have a 1300, or they have a 137468 number. All right then.
96611. Okay. Thanks, John.
Okay.
Thanks
all the very best, Carol. I hope that works out for you. And the time continues to march on, just past 9:30 to 10. That's 9:30 to 11 in the Tweed, as we say good morning to David. G'day, David. How are you?
Good morning, John. It's David here.
How can we help?
Board. David, this is a question, John, about wills and the distribution of the estate.
Sure.
The will was, and the estate, probated 4 years ago. It consisted of some houses and a family home. The family home was transferred to the remaining joint tenant who lives in the home at the moment. But one of the beneficiaries, because the assets were sold by the executor under price, particularly with regard to the current market, That asset is now, that particular house has increased in value 100%.
What, the family home?
No, an investment house.
All right, so sorry, but it's been sold, is that right?
It has been sold.
Right, and has the estate been distributed? Mm-hmm, right.
Yep. One of the beneficiaries didn't get enough, according to her, and is now claiming that because of the low price of the sale of that investment house and her dire financial circumstances, which goes back to the beginning of time, and a lifestyle to suit, is claiming with the against the executor for extra funds. Now, John, the question is there any record, legal record or precedent, where this can happen and that person, that particular beneficiary, could maybe attach a claim against the family home, which was transferred under joint tenancy?
Who was the executor under the will? Was the person who's now in the family home the executor?
No.
Okay, so...
A relation by marriage.
So that person wasn't an executor. They simply owned the property as joint tenants with the testator and therefore received the property by operation of law on the death of the testator.
Yes.
Okay. True. No, well, there certainly wouldn't be any claim against that property. And as for whether there's any claim against the executor, were the properties sold by auction or were they sold by private treaty?
Private treaty and in a hurry.
Right, okay. Well, there may be a claim against the executor personally for failing to act in the best interests of the estate to obtain the best price reasonably obtainable, and that's why... In the vast majority of cases, an executor will seek, firstly, get a valuation of the property, and then secondly, seek to sell by public auction so that, and as long as there is a proper sales program put in place to advertise the property, etc., then it is extremely difficult to come back on the executor and say that they have failed to act in the best interests of the estate. But if the properties were sold in haste and there is clear evidence that they were sold under value at the time, then the executor personally may be liable.
The executor is now suggesting, John, that he may have a claim against the family home to satisfy this claim by this cranky beneficiary.
No. Because the house that was held as joint tenants, it was joint tenants, it wasn't tenants in common.
No, it was joint tenants.
If it's joint tenants, the property doesn't even come within the estate. Because
right.
A property that's held as joint tenants transfers to the surviving joint tenant automatically by operation of law. So, no,
okay, John.
There's no claim.
Investment house that was sold in haste was in fee simple, owned by the deceased spouse, and was previously owned by that spouse prior to the marriage to the now the owner of the remaining spouse built the family home.
Sorry, how could the executor sell a property that belonged to the deceased spouse? Because the deceased spouse still alive?
No.
Oh,
no.
So the spouse died, the property went to the deceased, and then the deceased sold it. Is that the executor of the deceased will sold it? Is that?
No. It was in the deceased spouse's name in fee simple.
Right.
It was her separate house.
Right. Well, therefore, the executor of her will would have had to sell the property, not the executor of the testator's will.
Okay.
Because if the property is owned still in the name of the deceased, of the spouse, and she's died, then that property would be dealt with according to the terms of her will. And then from there it would go to, if the deceased the testator in this case was the beneficiary of her will, then he or she would then receive the property there.
Right.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, David, all the very best.
Bye.
And the time is just coming up to 4 minutes, or just past 4 minutes to 10. We have three callers still left online. Unfortunately, we're having some computer problems, so we'll take our next caller. Hello, good morning. Who am I talking to?
Good morning. My name's Paul, John.
G'day,
I just have
Paul.
I think it's a simple question.
Okay.
A New South Wales Incorporated Proprietary Limited Company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the sole director now, mm-hmm. but there are two shareholders who have decided to transfer their shares to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any stamp duty payable on the share transfer? It's not a land-rich company. It's just got some shares. That's all.
Right. Okay. And so, the company owns shares. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And it's not a trustee company? It's not the trustee of
no.
a trust?
No, yes. Nothing like that at all.
Yeah, look, Paul, I believe that's stamp duty exempt, but
That's what I thought too. Mm. I just thought I'd check with the expert.
Yes, well, but what I would suggest you do is actually give the Office of State Revenue in New South Wales a call. I've just got something in the back of my mind that once you get over a certain share value in New South Wales, that there is some duty payable. But if you ring the Office of State Revenue down there and they, do you have access to a computer?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you just look up New South Wales Office of State Revenue, I'm sure you'll be able to find a 1300 number for them, and you could just give them a call and double check that with them as well.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Okay, Paul.
Thank you for being a loyal Cowboy supporter.
All the best. Cheers now. Now, we still have two callers online, and unfortunately, because of a little glitch in our computer system at the moment, I'm not able to know who the callers are, but I've written the phone numbers down, and what the switch will do is put you on park, what we call park, and I'll take those calls as soon as we get off air, because we're quickly approaching the top of the hour, which, of course, is the 4CRB National News. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, it's been great to be with you this morning for The Law and You. Again, a little bit of a slow start, but a very strong finish. So thank you for all those people who've called in with those queries. As always, I'll look forward to being back again next week for another program of The Law and You. But until then, goodbye and God bless.